Please interact with us over on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965.
If this is your first time listening to the show, the hell took so long? You know, I'm actually kind of partially offended. You person who's first time listening to the show,
hey.
What the hell you been missing out on this entire time? We have fun songs. Sometimes people get their hair dyed on the air. Gold jumped through a table once.
It happened.
You missed all kinds of cool. Oh man, I almost cussed. You missed all kinds of cool stuff.
And sometimes we have to use the dump button.
I had to find myself.
Sometimes.
I had to fight my natural instinct there for just a second. You could have seen all kinds of cool stuff on this show, but welcome.
Welcome to the show. We had a meeting yesterday. All I'll say is we know there's a lot of new people listening. We appreciate you guys. Hope you're enjoying the show. We met, I won't share the gentleman's name, but he's texted it in the story and whatever. We've heard some really cool stories about people finding the station over the last month or so. Some people that were maybe going through some things in their personal life, and this is a true story. Someone came up to us at a remote last Friday.
Yep.
And the gentleman came up and said, hey, I wanted to thank you guys for doing the show. I go, oh, sure, man, we're not doing anything. Thank you.
They paid me for it.
Yeah, like, sure. I mean, no problem.
Welcome.
But he said he used to listen to country music, and he was going some things with basically alcoholism, and he said it was tough for him to listen to country music because a lot of the songs reference drinking. And he said he was looking for something else, and he was scrolling through the FM dial, and he found 96.5 The Fan. It's a true story he told us on Friday, and now he's a big fan of the station, the show, but this is a new listener.
That's
so
awesome.
So you never know how you're impacting people's lives, and also we welcome everybody that's checking out the show and the station for the first time, and what a time to jump on board. Playoff time. Maybe it took the Royals getting back to the postseason,
sure.
Cody.
Someone said from the 816, cool songs, more like Cody can't sing or run.
Yeah, the songs are debatable. The songs are debatable.
I started singing Royals songs, and now they're in the postseason. Doesn't seem like happenstance to me.
Yeah, but Mikel Garcia is doing this without your song. Think about that. Four hits, putting himself in the company of George Brett in terms of
pretty
a four-hit
company.
Game in the postseason. Let's talk more about that, and then we'll ask Vern about it as well in 20 minutes. I mean, the way they've gone about splitting this series to this point is pretty sensational if we consider the formula we all thought, and understandably so, to get that done.
Oh, because it hadn't been the formula the rest of the time.
We said, hey, it's one thing for Seth Lugo or Michael Wacha not to go six or seven innings, but the bullpen is pitching well, but you got to ask them, Cole Reagans has to, and this is what I said yesterday. I was wrong. I said, Cole Reagans, he's got to get to the sixth at minimum, has to get to the sixth. He did not get five innings for you yesterday. And yet the bullpen, they go right back to Angel Zerpa, who couldn't throw a strike the game before. This game, he looks sensational again. The rest of the bullpen, you get six outs from Chris Bubich, who, remember, this is a rehab season still for Chris Bubich. And yet, he looks great in his role. And this team doesn't have their star player, Bobby Witt, with a hit in the series yet.
He's the second best hitter. Vinny doesn't have a hit in the
10.
Series.
Vinny's, 0 for 10 as well. Or I guess he has a walk. Yeah, I think he's 0 for 10 as well. And yet, the series is evened up. The Royals are in the driver's seat with two games coming back to Kauffman Stadium.
I think that when you look back through the game yesterday, it gives me way more confidence. This was not the way they want. This is not the way they got all the way through September 1st. Chris Bubich was pitching in low leverage minor league games for 85% of his season. I'm not kidding. He was pitching low leverage in AAA for 80% of the time he was up. And then when he came up to the big leagues, he was pitching low leverage for the first 3 or 4 weeks he was up here. And then all of a sudden he was getting so many outs. They're like, what if we just started pitching you in the second or third highest leverage spots in postseason games, even though this is your first season recovering from Tommy John surgery? Mm-hmm. So, no, I didn't think that was going to be there. Garrett Hampson did not put in a lot of good innings for this team this year. Was he physically on the field? Sure. Did I think he was going to get it? No. Yesterday, other than the Salvador Perez home run, which has certainly led to plenty of wins earlier this year, was mostly the opposite of how they won all 86 games this year. They maybe won two games out of the 86 games that way last night. And they won it on the road at Yankee Stadium against one of the best teams in baseball. So yeah, I'm more confident coming out of that game than I've been at any particular time this year. I did not have Mikel Garcia and Garrett Hampson as the playoff heroes. But we also, you and I both knew, that that's not typically how the postseason goes. Christian Colon and Paulo Orlando will have their moments because every single guy in your roster will have to have their moments. The difference is right now is Bobby Jr. and Vinny aren't hitting. I don't see Aaron Judge doing anything.
No.
It's not like he's picking up the slack where the Stars and the Royals are lacking.
And that's why when we asked the question earlier, 913-586-7965, like, where's your concern with Bobby? One, Aaron Judge, you should be way more concerned. This is who he's been in the postseason.
He's played 46.
He struggled.
Games?
There's still part of me that fears that, like, on Wednesday or Thursday, he's hitting a big home run or something. But that's just me being a fan. But he has not hit in the postseason. Bobby Wood Jr. had two game-winning RBI in the Orioles series. So that's, I guess, why I'm like, just a couple games ago, the dude came up with the biggest hits of the game. So, yeah, it's stunning to see him go 0-for-5 in back-to-back outings. He's coming back to Kauffman, where his numbers are sensational. I'm not really that worried with Bobby. What is interesting to me is, okay, do I have to go in tomorrow thinking Seth Lugo has to go six? No, I would like that, but I don't think so. Hell, I don't know if they'll let him, because right now this bullpen is a huge weapon for them. We knew about the offense at times this year, and we knew about the starting pitching. The big concern was always the bullpen, and right now they kind of have everything clicking. Even if your biggest star offensively is not clicking, your offense scored, 9 runs in 2 games in this series. Yep. Your bullpen is lights out. It really is. And you have a starting pitching staff that I still think, if you can have Seth Lugo give you 5, like, that's maybe all of a sudden my expectation has changed, that all I'm asking for is 5 out of him.
Because of the way the end of the season worked, and we talked about this going into the postseason and the bullpen and all the stuff we didn't know, the Royals, this version of the Royals, is better than this version of the Yankees. I would not have said that for a huge chunk of the season. The Yankees were the better baseball team for a huge chunk of the major league season. As currently constructed, the Royals have the better starting rotation, the better bullpen, and a lineup that can at least hang. Like, we see, like, up and down the bottom line, like, yeah, the Yankees lineup's still probably better, but it's not way, like, when you start factoring in the pitching part of it, not so much. This version of the Royals is better than that version of the Yankees. It's not something I was prepared for. I didn't think they couldn't win a series, 5-game series. Teams win 3 games and 5 games all the time. Weird things happen constantly. Nothing holds you back from doing that.
But we all said they had a win last night. On the show yesterday, we talked about that. You couldn't go down 2-0. You weren't winning 3 in a row against the New York Yankees. And you might be saying, well, don't you want that to happen? Well, sure, I would love for the Royals to have a chance to clinch at Kauffman Stadium on Thursday. That is in play now. Do I think they're going to win 3 in a row? I'll be honest, probably not. But the series is evened up. I feel great about the Royals' chances to win the series, though. I think now that they've also won a game in New York, if this series does have to get back to New York for a deciding game 5, the moment's not going to be too big for this group. I'm not worried about that kind of stuff anymore. You know, heading in, it's a young team. No, some young players have stepped up. Michael Massey, Mikel Garcia, Bobby in the Orioles series. Pitching the bullpen, a lot of young names in the bullpen, other than Schreiber and Urseg. I mean, and you know, you go through, you've had Bubich, we mentioned him, Sam Long, like, some of these guys, Angel Zerpa, one game was rough, this past outing was great again.
And Vern even said he didn't think it was as rough as you look. Got squeezed a little bit, which certainly, mm-hmm. The zone's been weird. And J.J. Piccolo, who was on the show earlier at 10:30, we'll play that back at 1:30 if you missed it, he had mentioned how tight the zone was in the early press. And that's both ways. I'm not saying
There's
a reason why both starters have been getting run out of both games.
I agree with this text from the 913. Someone talks about the Yankees playing with the weight of the expectations on them. I do think we are watching what happens with a team that's playing loose and doesn't have the pressure, especially in their own ballpark there in New York.
I think now
that the series is evened up, the pressure just went up another 10 notches for Judge, who still hasn't hit, for Aaron Boone. Whatever pressure we all discussed last Friday, which was valid, it's times 10.
Imagine if they lose tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
Imagine then what the weight will feel like.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I actually, you know, some people say, it's not on the field stuff. Of course, we see it. It happens too much in baseball specifically where to say it doesn't matter. It absolutely matters, especially when we're discussing the New York Yankees and what New York market is in terms of media coverage, in terms of fandom and all of that.
I think somehow we forget sometimes. We talk about this all the time when we talk about people, like, in a negative way. Like, I wouldn't attack Jazz Chisholm as a person, right? Am I going to be, like, going after his family? I'm going to make fun of him, the baseball player.
Yeah, we're all booing Jazz tomorrow night at the K. You can join us.
Either Raz Jazz
or Boo Jazz.
Or Boo Jazz. We're open to which one you like better. #RazJazz, again, feels like spirit fingers.
Yeah.
#BooJazz feels like a spooky jazz playing.
It is October.
Halloween pop-up bar.
It's October.
So maybe it plays both ways. Maybe can for Club 610, can we do a like Halloween-themed cocktail too early?
It's too early for that.
What? It's October 8th. That's not too early.
I mean,
it's
the like haunted houses and all the corn maze type stuff or whatever you call those.
Yeah, you
things.
Can go to a pumpkin patch and get your fix in. Mm-hmm. But we pretend like they're not human beings. You think Aaron Judge doesn't sit in his hotel? You think he just sits in his hotel room at night, puts on reruns of Friends on Netflix, and he's just feeling good about himself? No, he's thinking about the at-bat that he blew in the previous game. Giancarlo Stanton's probably thinking about how his body doesn't move anymore.
He's that man so can't get, slow.
I've never seen a slower baseball player in my life. I've never seen a baseball player that slow. Is he really that slow, or is it just effort? There's just no way if he got on his horse, he's that slow, right?
It's probably a
like
combination
he was really
of both.
Hustling?
It's probably a combination of both.
Because I've seen Salvi when he turns it on.
This next text gets us right into what we were planning on talking about anyway, and then we'll have Vern join us in 10 minutes. Someone said you could have Aaron Boone as the second New York coach/manager fired this month. How about this week? If the Royals eliminate the Yankees, you could have a week in which Robert Saleh of the Jets gets fired. He already did this morning. And Aaron Boone could be fired by Friday morning. I mean, I'm serious. That could all happen this week. Robert Saleh, let's talk about him for a second. We get right back to the Royals. Stunning that he's getting fired? No. Timing? Yes. Right? Like, I think there was someone just screenshotted a tweet. I think you probably, it's not a take that was that out there. Week one at halftime, I tweeted out, Robert Saleh is getting fired during the season. I think we all kind of thought that after the week one game. Yeah. Robert Saleh probably should have been fired in the offseason because we already knew him and Aaron Rodgers didn't get along. And so now you wasted time. It's already October 8th, and you think that you're going to salvage your season by firing Robert Saleh. I don't believe it. Yeah, your head coach and your quarterback didn't get along. You're going to side with the quarterback 9 times out of 10, if not 100% of the time, or you should at least. But we all watched, maybe you're up early Sunday morning in London, Jets lost to the Vikings. That performance was not just bad play calling, which Rogers that play caller is still there, by the way, Nathaniel Hackett, that's Aaron Rodgers' buddy. Aaron Rodgers was making terrible throws. A couple of those interceptions he had were horrendous. So this is more than just a Robert Saleh. He's a scapegoat. Don't worry, he's making $20,000 a day for the next 2 years. He'll be fine.
I could retire if you paid me $20,000 a day for the next 2 years. I could quit this job.
And he'll be a defensive coordinator, I'm sure, next year for somebody. But the Jets, think about this in the AFC conversation as it relates to the Chiefs. At one point, I think it was fair to say, all right, maybe the Jets are a factor if they surprise the Bills, because if you win your division, you at least have a chance. The Buffalo Bills are winning that division easily now, even if they lose to them on Monday night somehow. And the Jets now are one less team with a quarterback that at one point in time was one of the best in the league. I don't think he is anymore. You don't have to worry about that anymore. We can narrow this list down. The Jets are done.
Everything in life is not, yes, they're done. Everything in this world is not black and white. I have stated on the show before, when choosing between quarterback and coach, always choose the quarterback. Do not when they're 40 and like got high on peyote in a darkness retreat to decide they even wanted to play football. Not in that situation. You don't have to bury yourself for that.
Ayahuasca. Get it right. Get your drugs right, okay?
There are exceptions to the rule. This is the exception to the rule. That man sat in the darkness for 72 hours, high as a kite, was like, you know what? I do want to play football. I don't think he meant it. I think that was the drugs talking, maybe, that made you think you wanted to play football, because that does not look like a man enjoying playing the sport of football anymore. Now he's got his head coach fired. I've seen a lot of head coaches fired. The last one to fire in week 5 was Matt Rhule. He's 1-4. He had won one game the year before. They had no choice but to fire him. I'm not saying Saleh was 7-10 last year. And if his team had won their next upcoming football game on a Monday night, they could have been playing for a tie of first place. Have you ever seen a team fire their head coach when they were technically in line to play a game for first place?
No,
this but is this all is, Aaron Rodgers. They've let him hijack their franchise. That's crazy.
Yeah, they deserve what they're getting. I mean, there's risk when you let a guy that obviously has had a Hall of Fame career. Nobody's disputing that. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you let someone come in and take over your entire organization. The payoff is what happened with Brady and the Bucs. You win a Super Bowl, right? And it works.
But that was cohesive. He didn't just
Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know, even though I actually don't think him and Bruce Arians totally were on the same page then. But still, my point was more just that there is risk involved with selling your soul to a quarterback at that age. It worked for the Bucs. They have no regrets. The Jets have gone so far, you can't go anymore all in other than, I guess, trading for Davante Adams in about a week or so.
They've already given him Lazard and Nathaniel Hackett and every other former agreement.
And so if you're the owner, like, you know it all is whether or not Aaron Rodgers can get this thing figured out. Otherwise, you're blowing it all up anyway. So Joe Douglas, you're the GM. You guys just fired Robert Saleh. You're next, pal. You're next in the offseason. You know, like, if you don't get this team in the playoffs,
we're gonna let somebody else
build
this thing. I mean, what are they? God, do they just trade for Devontae? I mean, do you just go all in now?
They are. I just don't know why Davante Adams. What? So I know they want to trade for Adams because Rodgers wants Davante Adams, and again, they will do whatever he wants. But if you're Davante Adams, why am I going to New York again? I know my old buddy Aaron Rodgers is there, but why? No. The team that might be after the 2-6 by the time I get there. Why do I want to go to that team?
Anybody who has worked in the service industry will understand what this is. This is how the text exchange would go if I was Davante Adams and Aaron is like, hey, dude, I'm doing everything to get you to New York. It's like when you're on the golf course or you're at the pool and the restaurant manager sends you the old text, Gold, and they send you the text that, hey, man, someone just called in sick, really need you. And your response is, damn, dude, that sucks. Good luck with that. And they're like, no, but are you available? And you're like, good luck. Seriously, I hope you find someone to help you cover that shift, because it sure as hell isn't going to be me on my off day saving your ass. If I'm Davante Adams, I'm trying to get to any other part of town. I'm not trying to.
You never
I'm
go
not
in?
Trying to end you, up with
you,
the Jets.
You never went in when they needed help? You never went in ever?
If I was already locked into like off day mode, hell no.
Yeah,
you'll figure it out. They always restaurant managers always make it seem far more dire than it is. What is it? Someone gets their steak 5 minutes late. This isn't open heart surgery. You're not calling me in for something important. You're calling me in for restaurant work. It'll be fine if I don't come in today.
Yeah,
look, if I were free, it's fine. But if I'm already by the pool with a cocktail, day over.
Yeah, if you've already had a few drinks, then you probably shouldn't go to work anyway at that point. I would say, though, what you described, though, there was a fast casual chain recently. They were short-staffed. They closed it a couple hours early because of short staff. So maybe because someone was you, you know, just decided not to come in.
You think so?
And help fill in a spot.
You know, but you know, in my time, it was easier. I think there were less trouble in staffing in the service industry,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That was pre-COVID. I was working
That's true.
In the service industry.
Someone lastly said, hey, they got Garrett Wilson there, who's great. They barely throw him the ball. Oh, I agree. They don't have Rodgers and Garrett Wilson don't have the best rapport. It's a problem.
No, they don't like each other.
And of course, it's the Jets. I mean, come on now. I'm enjoying the hell out of this week so far. The Jets
watching
are
New York.
The Jets are. You know me. I cannot stand East Coast sports fans. Period. So I enjoy.
You think they're all Bob Costas? Like disappointed the Yankees aren't winning while actively calling a game.
Bob Costas did not like that Bobby Witt Jr. had the double play that got Stanton out or whatever. He was very disappointed. We can play that call if we want in a second. But I cannot stand East Coast sports fans. So seeing Jets fan that also might be Yankee fan suffering is enjoyable to me.
Yeah,
yes,
it is. I will find a way. I haven't gone through my mentions, you know, like properly, but there's plenty of Yankees fans in there being just saying things like cry bitch or whatever in there. If the Royals manage to get this series, me going back through those is going to be delightful because I'm going to quote tweet. Hell out of some people.
I don't usually
if the
do
Royals
it,
win this series.
But I have a few friends that are Yankees fans, and let's just say I have a couple, yes, bookmarked tweets from that June, was it June series where they came in and kicked our ass?
Oh, man, just
a few of those. One in particular that said, this one's great because it's already proven terrible. The tweet said, the AL Central is ass, the Royals suck. So if the Yankees lose to the AL Central Royals, and then the Royals are playing another AL Central team in the ALCS, it's a perfect tweet to bring back up. Well, anyway, up next, let's get right into the Royals some more with our guy Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. His On Deck show at 5 o'clock tomorrow ahead of game 3. Let's ask him about the start of the series. And is he worried at all about Bobby Witt Jr.?
Full count on Hampson. The pitch. Line through the left side, a base hit in the left field. Pham sprints around third. Verdugo's throw to the plate. Offline, not in time. Pham scores standing. Garrett Hampson takes the extra base. He drives in another run in this postseason. And the Royals lead 3-1 in the top of the fourth inning. Garrett Hampson is 2-for-2 tonight and 3-for-3 this October.
Jake Eisenberg on the call right here on The Fan. Of course, game 3 tomorrow night at Kauffman Stadium here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern's On Deck show at 5 o'clock. First pitch at 6:08. And let's welcome in our Royals insider, Josh Ferner. He's brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you, Royals fans. There will be a few Buds in that parking lot, I would say. Budweiser's, that is. I mean, I guess there could be some others.
It's legal in Missouri.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there'll be multiple Buds in the parking lot tomorrow as fans are. That atmosphere, we can't wait for that. I can't wait to be out there tomorrow.
Yeah, and it was already going to be electric, and then Jazz Chisholm gave the capacity crowd a villain, something to rally around. That was, I understand what he was saying until that word, lucky. But boy, did he make a big time mistake, and he'll hear it.
Yeah,
he'll hear it coming up on Wednesday.
He's going to be booed, right, every time he steps in the batter's box, don't you think?
Yeah, I certainly do, and I'm certainly a supporter of it. Why not? That's what this is about. I mean, Aaron Judge is already going to be ridden hard by Royals fans throughout Wednesday and Thursday night. And now Jazz Chisholm, I think, is taking some of that from Judge and putting it on his own shoulders.
I kind of like, Vern, that the very first guy to show you how to throw it back in someone's face, similar to those 14 and 15 teams did, was Salvador Perez. He sticks his tongue out right after Rodon does it to him in the first inning and, like, just immediately kind of puts the onus back on him. I like that it's Salvi who did it kind of first in that, like, initial moment, because he's the guy who remembers all of those runs when they're doing the neck chop back at different Astros players. You know, like, it kind of feels like it's got that same energy all of a sudden.
Yeah, the Kendrys Morales, Lance McCullers throat chop. Cole Reagans last night showed as much of his competitiveness. I mean, let that stuff come out. I've never really seen that from the normally mild manner, or at least composed, Cole Reagans. Yeah, after Juan Soto gave him his usual stare down as he drew that first inning walk, Reagans punches his ticket in his next at-bat and returns the stare. Normally, Reagans does not fall for that stuff, but I love to see it. I love to see the competitor inside a guy like Cole Reagans or Bobby Witt Jr. It's not very often you see that fire inside of them. You know it's in there, or else they wouldn't be as great as they are. Yeah, as far as Salvi and wagging the tongue
so good.
Base, yeah, that was hilarious, and he couldn't help but laugh about it after the game. Honestly, what Rodon did in the first inning, guys, I can't really remember another. Yeah, I mentioned this earlier today to Fesco and them, but it's very Twitter. It was very young media member that doesn't understand it's a long game, it's a long season, it's a strange sport. To celebrate like that in the first inning is very 2024. First inning, let's tweet about how the Yankees stink and not wait for the following 24 outs.
He looked like an MMA fighter. The guys were like waving their arms, swag into the ring, and they get K'd in like 12 seconds.
The defensive back that's down 35-7. He breaks one up in the end zone and comes up talking trash, you know, putting the sword away and stuff.
Yeah, that is very, very true. I mean, it adds to this series, though, for tomorrow night. Now, I know you talked about this on postgame a little bit last night, but other than Bobby, who we can focus on in a second, guys like Garrett Hampson and Yuli Gurriel, Tommy Pham, like the old guys with experience are stepping up in these big moments.
Salvi, 35 playoff games. Tommy Pham, 35 playoff games. Yuli Gurriel, 90 playoff games. And Garrett Hampson making his third separate postseason run. Those guys scored the four runs in that four-run fourth inning. Listen, I'm not going to say that the Royals are fortunate to leave New York with a split, because that's not how I feel. I mean, the Yankees are just as fortunate to have a split as the Royals are to have a 1-1 series returning to Kauffman Stadium. But not just coming into this series, all season long, there's no debate of who the five most valuable Royals are. It's Bobby, Salvi, Vinny, Reagans, and Lugo. I guess you could debate Michael Wacha and Vinny Pasquantino, I guess, but it's the big three bats, and it's your top two starters. Well, one starter's yet to appear. If you want to throw Wacha into the mix, okay, well, none of your starters have seen the fifth inning. Bobby and Vinny are a combined 0-4-19, and outside of a 402-foot blast off of the bat of Salvador Perez, those three are a combined 0-4-16. They're not fortunate, but this is why I feel as if the Royals are just in complete control, because just like you're not going to keep Aaron Judge down forever, you're not going to keep Bobby Witt Jr. down forever. They got to face Cole Reagans in a game five. They got to see Seth Lugo coming up on Wednesday. The Royals stars are yet to be stars, and there's no reason to believe that they won't begin to shine starting on Wednesday night. Soto's been good. Judge hasn't been the difference maker, but he's still, got on base twice, scored a run in the opener. He hasn't been awful. He hasn't been a superstar. He's done more than Bobby has at the plate. Obviously, Bobby's done more defensively, but superstars, MVP candidates, I believe, will return to their studly form, and I think that'll happen as soon as tomorrow night.
Vern, has Michael Massey been the single best player in the series for the Royals?
I think so, yeah. Offensively, defensively, not too much to write home about on the base paths, but yeah, well-roundedness, it's him. Tommy Pham had a nice night last night, bouncing from left field to right field, making plays on both sides. Yeah, I'd still put Yuli Gurriel probably in the two-spot battle in Salvador Perez for that silver medal if we're handing out ALDS trophies. Yeah, it's Massey, it's Salvi, it's Yuli Gurriel, because even though Salvi's offensive numbers, he has a hit in every single playoff game, but they're not as eye-popping and not a lot of extra base hits outside of last night's home run. What he's doing behind the dish, the way that he's guiding these pitchers through the games, have been, reflective of a 13-year veteran.
You said it, Bobby Witt Jr., 0-for-5 back-to-back nights. It's the first time that's happened in 3 years in the big league. So, it's about time it happened, I guess. How dare you have that happen 3 years into his career?
Right.
Nobody's all that worried, but I think the word the text line uses is like a little concerned. The reason why I'm not all that concerned is because I just saw him in the series prior against Baltimore
Right. Come
up with two game-winning RBI.
Yeah, and they're pitching him well. If you look at his 10 at-bats, he finds himself in an 0-2 hole, especially in last night's game, finds himself in an 0-2 hole pretty quickly. You have to paint if you're going to come into Bobby Witt Jr. Same thing for Aaron Judge. You look at some of the pitches that Reagans was making to the big fella yesterday, some quality pitches, and yes, Judge missed a few tasty offerings from Reagans over the center of the plate last night. But still, credit to the pitching of the Royals, credit to the pitching of the Yankees for holding down those studly righties. But listen, Bobby, I was just about to go and listen to your conversation with J.J. Piccolo, and I was seeing how it was labeled on our website. And it says, Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo joins Cody and Gold to discuss Bobby Witt Jr.'s postseason struggles. And, man, he's won two games. I know you guys didn't write it, but
we don't write the headlines.
He won the two games in Baltimore. He helps take a game in New York with a pair of outstanding defensive plays, inning-ending double plays. Yeah, 0-for-5, I understand, but he's 3-1 so far in his postseason career, and he's struggling?
Vern,
no, I'm not worried about Bobby Witt Jr. whatsoever. He's too fast, right? I mean, the speed is going to snap this skid, if nothing else.
Let me ask you a baseball question as a guy who's watched and cared about baseball his entire life. Is Giancarlo Stanton the slowest player you've ever seen?
No, there has to be
Benji Molina. Cologne or something.
Benji Molina,
Benji Molina. I mean, that dude was a rectangle running around the bases. So I'll say that he was a touch slower. But, I mean, to your point,
it's had an impact Giancarlo in the series.
Yeah, he's cost him at least three runs across the first two games, right? Game one's a blowout if he can run. If you were listening to Denny's call in the first inning, again, two on, two outs after Reagans punches Judge and Wells out. Runners on first and second, and Giancarlo Stanton hits like a dribbler to the right side to Michael Massey. And someone with a bit of speed, could have made that close, could have extended that threat in the first inning. But off the bat, Denny Matthews says, hit to the right side, Stanton can't run, out number three. I mean, just a declarative statement that Stanton cannot run. And Aaron Boone was asked about it yesterday. Hey, is there any thought to, you know, to hell with it? It's October. We're going for the World Series and just let it loose down the first baseline. And Aaron Boone basically said, well, he has a decision to make. Basically put the onus on Stanton, saying,
jeez.
Yeah, business decisions right now are happening from our designated hitter.
Guaranteed checks in baseball, man. You don't have to worry about the health thing. Just get yourself down the line. At that point, I guess, would you seriously consider taking him out of the lineup if you're the Yankees?
Well, I mean, for who?
They're not super deep.
Jason Dominguez, I guess, you know, he can run into one maybe just as easily as Giancarlo Stanton. I'm not opposed to it if I'm Aaron Boone, although I guess I would be siding with a rookie making his playoff debut in Dominguez over a guy in Stanton who has still been hitting the ball hard. No, he can't move, but he can hit the ball hard.
I just don't even get the business decision part. He's 34. He's under contract for two more years, making $32 million next year. When he's 36, he's making $19 million. There's no opt-outs or anything. Like, what is business decision for what? Like, he doesn't have a big contract on the horizon in a month from now. It's not like he's a 28-year-old free agent.
He wants to go, like, surfing or something in the offseason.
I think it's more like business decision in that if he steps on the gas pedal out of the box, he's going to pull that hamstring. Yeah. He's going to tear something. He doesn't trust his body to ramp up
to make through the rest of the postseason.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, you're in the damn playoffs, dude. Like, right. What do you
risk it?
If you were a month away from your first big payday, I maybe understand it a little bit more. I'm just saying, like,
Vinny's playing with a still broken thumb. He doesn't even have a contract.
Well said.
Bingo.
100% right. And again, the business decision aspect of it, I think, has less to do with money, more so than I'm going to listen to my body.
Gotcha.
But to your point, I'm sure Vinny's body right now is saying, stop playing baseball. My thumb hurts like a son of a bitch. Buddy continues to run out there for the boys.
Bingo. We're talking to Josh Vernier. One final question for him, and then he's got his on-deck show, of course, tomorrow, coming up at 5 o'clock. Seth Lugo, I know we'll talk more tomorrow with you about this, but multiple starting pitchers now that haven't made it past the fifth inning, is this just that we should almost expect how they're going to manage it also? Like, I know pitch count was a problem yesterday, but with how great the bullpen has been, is this what they're going to do? Like, would we be surprised to see a pitcher even go six innings now?
I hope not. You know, I hope Seth Lugo can be the Seth Lugo that we've become accustomed to seeing. You know, bullpen picked up Cole Reagans last night.
Sure.
You know, look at what Tarek Skubal did. Look at what Zach Wheeler did. Yeah. Look at what the best pitchers in baseball are doing. Reagans did not answer the bell last night, and he was picked up again by his defense and his bullpen. No, I'm still going into that game tomorrow expecting six innings from Seth Lugo. Now, you feel better if he's unable to do that he can be picked up by his bullpen, right? I don't think any of us thought that was possible for a majority of this season, but Reagans didn't deserve to come back out in the fifth inning, even at 87 pitches. Even if that was 77 pitches, his command was shaky. You saw Salvi come out in the fourth inning and tell the bench, hey, get somebody up. He does not have his good stuff. So it was apparent to Salvi last night. And then Michael Wacha back on Saturday, he was up in the zone pretty consistently in that third and fourth inning. He was getting hit hard early on in that game. So Wacha and Reagan simply didn't get the job done. Now, they weren't bad. They battled. They made pitches when they needed to. They kept their team in the game. But thank God this bullpen has righted itself over the past month.
Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. We'll check in again with you tomorrow, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Vern doing a great job, of course. Postseason baseball, his postgame shows have been a lot of fun to listen to with the Royals run here for the first time since 2015. He'll join us tomorrow at 12:30 as well.
Can't wait. Obviously, I'm excited about Kauffman Stadium baseball. That's all.
No, tomorrow's.
You and I are both planning on being there, covering it from a media perspective. Try to get you some fun stuff after the game and some things to talk about. certainly in there. But I mean, yeah, this, we're the home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. I want to hear playoff baseball on Crystal Clear FM. Could you imagine how much better it's going to sound versus 14 on the radio, you know? Sounded good in 14. Sounded great in 15. Now we're on FM, gold. Now nothing. We're unstoppable. You can listen to the playoff game in a car wash, under a bridge, when the sun goes down.
You doesn't
know,
matter.
All those things are available to you now.
And of course, we will be joined by Nate Taylor here in about 10 minutes. We will talk some Chiefs with him briefly. He's going to join us in studio.
Ask him if he's going to the game on Wednesday.
We should. He's a big Royals fan as well. So Nate Taylor's going to join us in a little bit. But in the meantime, let's get to the random question of the day.
Sorry, Kramer is helping us for a little bit on the show, and he doesn't know where random question.
Not Kramer's fault.
We've had
some moving parts today,
yeah,
unfortunately.
It happens. Yeah, it happens. For you, Gold, for you, Kramer, over on the text line, 913-586-7965. And, of course, you can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and Facebook. We'd love if you'd like and subscribe our video channels as we continue to put out content on those at the Fan 965. I got to ask this question. Is the weather starts to change? You and I are hoodie weather.
It is.
I see you bought a postseason 2024.
I had to.
You couldn't wait till they went on sale like me.
So I'll be honest.
You had to dive in. I get it.
I wanted the one that said October ready. But a lot of the places are out of the October ready
one.
I do too. This it's the dry fit material that I like. Now it's the only material I'll buy for the sports hoodies. Anyway, real quick, so they're out. They said they aren't ordering more unless the team gets to the ALCS.
Wow.
So this was like the last hoodie they had left, and it's it's just the. I don't have any Royals hoodies. All my other ones are from 14 and 15. It was time for a new one.
All of mine are from 14 and 15. I typically wait until they go on sale, but maybe I'll cave this year and buy early. But for you guys, I was asked this question, is the weather starts to change more hoodie weather. I'm going to ask you, either underrated, overrated, or properly rated.
I've heard of this before.
That's the random question. But like the thing I'll give you now is sitting outside in a fire pit.
Oh.
Is it properly rated? Is it overrated? Or is it underrated? I will say one of the downsides is the stinking of smoke. I feel like you got to strip naked before you walk inside your house. That's a real downside for it, and I don't think we discuss it enough when we're talking about sitting outside around a fire.
So it's properly rated, 100% with you on the smoke smell, and you're like, well, Gold, you can't smell anyway. The last 4 days, randomly, starting to smell again, which is a great development for those of you who have been listening to the show for a while. If you're new, you're like, what the hell is he talking about?
Since December,
I haven't been able to smell. Magically, during this playoff run for the Royals, the last 4 days, I've been able to start slowly smelling again, including the firewood. Last night, I ended up not going to a bar to watch the game. I watched
over at
a coworker friend's house, and they had a fire pit going. So this hoodie I wore last night, and it reeked of smoke. I threw it in the washer before I went to bed just so I could wear it today, and it reeked. Otherwise, the whole studio would smell like smoke. So I think it's properly rated. A good fire pit, man, a few drinks around a fire pit, watching some baseball is perfect.
First two texts say underrated, say I do it every night, sitting outside, cocktail, top tier activity.
Okay.
I think as you get older, it becomes more of a top tier, where I don't want to go somewhere. I think it's better with people. I don't want to just sit out by the fire by myself. I want there like to be 6, 8, 9 people. I'm not starting a fire if it's just me and the wife all the time, right? Every once in a while, fine. But I prefer to like a group activity.
Well, I'll tell you what right now. I'm going to light that fire pit outside your place when I'm staying there here
in
a few weeks.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah. No, I can't
big
wait.
Big couch, you know?
Make
sectional?
Sure you wipe down that shower, Kramer.
I got you. No, it's properly rated. I love a good fire pit.
So properly rated.
Yeah.
I think if anything, properly rated is the I'm not going to give it underrated. It's not underrated. Yeah. Yeah. It's an outside. I like sitting outside drinking in a lot of cases. In my case, I've got like the screened in porch. The bugs and the smoke smell. We cannot ignore those for any activity where you're just sitting around a fire, right? There's a limit to its maximum enjoyment. Mm. I think properly rated is probably right. I'm surprised. Someone was telling me it's underrated, saying it is one of also their favorite fall activities. It's hard because it's an activity. I think it seems great because you just got done spending 4 months not being able to do it. Like, it's taken away. Any activity would be like, this is the greatest thing on the planet. If they took it away from you for 4 months and then you got to enjoy it.
So it says you can also get the smokeless fire pit ones, too. You know, those, the little, what are those?
I have one of those. Solo stove.
Yeah. But there's not a smoky.
Not nearly a smoky. I'm not saying smoke doesn't exist.
I actually don't mind the smell.
It's just the smoke in your face. It doesn't prevent the smell of smoke from permeating your clothing.
The smell is not an issue when you're doing it. It's what you said, which is like the next morning and... You know, it's like being at a, you know, if you were at a casino or whatever, where like the next morning you're showering and you can like smell the smoke coming off your hair as you're showering. Like that's the part you don't like. But the actual smell in the moment, Yeah.
In the moment, I don't mind. It's the post one. Someone says, just get a smokeless one. Just get like a propane one.
Doesn't that take away?
I think it changes the ambience. Uh-huh. I think that the energy, the vibe is better, right? If you've got like an actual fire going. Maybe that's just me, though. Maybe
someone says, Gold, you can just say you were watching it at Fesco's. He said he had his son over for the game. Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah, I was over there. Yes. They have started calling me his son on their show.
Why?
I don't know.
It makes me...
I had a good time, though. It was nice to go over there. It was nice when they invited me. I was going to go to a bar. They're like, well, he lives 5 minutes from me. That's why. And like, why? Well, just watch it here. We have two TVs set up on the patio. Why not? I was like, sure.
What was the cocktail arrangement? Did you bring BYOB? There was no
alcohol consumed last night.
By anybody?
I can't speak for everybody. I don't know.
I can't speak for everybody.
I don't know. I don't think so.
You were outside at a fire pit with a playoff baseball game, and you didn't crack one beer?
I was working.
Are you an American?
I was working.
Do you love this country?
I was working.
I doubt you're committed.
I am able. This is the revert. 2 years ago, you said I couldn't go on. I am capable on a weeknight of just having a normal beverage. It's possible.
What'd you drink? Water?
What do you think?
A Propel?
Yep.
It's just it.
Ugh. What? How can you say yuck? It's water. Flavored.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm out on flavored
water.
I'm
still waiting for the Propel sponsorship. All these years of free love.
All these years on the video stream.
All these years.
Of you consuming
still
Propel.
Still waiting. Yeah, no, man. Last night we were talking about just the viewership. We'll talk more about this in the 1 o'clock hour ask Nate about it. Because how you balance watching Royals and Chiefs. But let's talk a little Chiefs/Royals with Nate Taylor. I want to ask him about what we saw from Juju Smith-Schuster and the knee that was supposedly going to explode at any time a year ago, according to Albert Breer. Nate Taylor joins us next. One o'clock hour on a Tuesday in Kansas City. What a night yesterday
was.
Double
victory Tuesday.
It is. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. Nate Taylor from The Athletic joining us in studio. We will talk plenty about that Saints-Chiefs game last night. Also looking ahead, Chiefs in a bye week, 5-0. But we are going to start with a little Royals talk. Nate's got a t-shirt on. I don't know if the boss wants us to or not yet. I think we might
let's
have...
Let's just let the cat out of the bag.
I think we're going to have...
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen?
We don't know how we are giving them to you, but we, over the next 2 days, somehow have shirts to give to you guys. And Nate is currently rocking one of them, shirt. And what does it say? What does it say, Nate?
We ain't come this far to come this far.
That's right. That's right.
God, he's been dropping bars this entire postseason. Every single line he gives is somehow some lyric to the next song he's going to work on. They're obviously made by Ray Gunn, but brought to you by DM Injury Law. So we're not
more
sure exactly how we're going
to
give them away.
Come.
Yet, but we have.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Tomorrow and Thursday, there will be details on how to acquire said shirt.
Yeah, Ray Gunn's been a good friend of the show, you know?
Yeah.
He's been hooking us up with shirts for years.
Yeah. I'm happy to be the debut model.
That's right.
It's very comfortable. It's cut finely tuned. You know, the arms feel like I could go out there and throw maybe a third of an inning if necessary.
What was it like? Oh, actually, I'm curious to get your perspective. You were at Arrowhead, of course, covering the Chiefs game.
Yes.
But what was that like knowing, much like anybody else, there's another game going on, and how are you balancing that?
So it was a lot of, I like to tell myself, you know, we are who we tell the stories of ourselves to one another. I like to tell myself that, hey, man, I'm great. I'd be a flexible, multitasking, compartmentalizing. You know, I am not a world-class athlete, but I have, you know, the personality that is similar to some athletes.
World-class athlete in the hot dog derby, right, Cody?
Yes. Oh.
Man, I'm wearing the shirt they sent me. Damn, that hurts extra bad today.
Go ahead, Nate. My apologies.
No, it's okay. I really struggled to multitask last night. I really struggled to be like, hey, what down is it? Like, what is it, third and what? Huh? Now, I was professional enough to get through it with my job. So, but no, it was the more important game was obviously in Yankee Stadium. The more, I would argue, exciting game
sure
was in Yankee Stadium. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, It was slightly ahead of us because the game started, I don't know, what, 45 minutes before kickoff?
But it was slow. They were only through like two innings before that game started.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the best things is the NFL is very, very particular about its brand. So they weren't going to like change the TVs in the press box.
Gotcha.
I think a majority of people, and I was telling you guys before we came on, that it's the first time I can remember in the Patrick Mahomes era where the club level was just more empty than full.
Yeah.
They were in the club.
They were
watching
in the club because that's the only way you can watch the game. The NFL was like, I mean, fine, I guess we'll let them turn to TBS on a Monday night. So we're all watching the game on our laptops, our, you know, mobile devices, and it was like a cascade of alerts to each other. It's just like, oh, Garrett Hampson. And then like 2 seconds later, whoa, Garrett Hampson. And it just kind of,
depending on which app you were on.
Yeah. It kind of just filled throughout the press box. So it's like, oh, Kareem scored a touchdown. Wow, what a moment. Interesting. Never thought we'd see that again. Wait, what's the score? Like, hey, who's on first? Like, it was just so memorable. So it's what I wrote in The Athletic. Just, this is one of the rare nights in Kansas City sports history. And everybody got what they wanted. They wanted the Chiefs to stay undefeated. And more importantly, now you have a sense of real belief and hope that the Royals can get through the New York Yankees and you know, you're two victories away from the American League
Championship
Series.
You going out there Wednesday or Thursday?
I shouldn't. I want to. You know, ladies and gentlemen, reporters who cover
the Chiefs. You're not going to bury you with that money, Nate. Just buy a playoff ticket.
Yeah.
They might bury you with the money.
Right.
Or using the money.
Yes. But I'm not, the bye week. It's so funny, like, hearing Patrick at the podium talk about, like, his own desires and then realizing that, like, oh shoot, that's right, I did set up a vacation for me and Brittany to, like, get away for, like, you know, take my mind off football for like the 6 days I have or whatever. And I was just standing off to the side being like, it's a good husband right there, because you know what, checks my calendar, gonna have the same conversation in a few days. It's gonna be Wednesday afternoon, like, babe, I gotta go.
See, I think you have
get the gutters done today, so that, you know,
that you're sure,
get the honey-do list or whatever the hell you had planned for the bye week taken care of now.
Yeah, I gotta go to the grocery store today, the pharmacist, the gutters, the yard. Yeah,
at least can't you go with which I know you also want this to be the case, but can't you also go with the, hey, I want to take our son to experience that? You know, can't you go with that? Can't you go with that?
That's cold.
Can you do that?
I mean, it is a card I have. Now, I will be reminded by Holly, my wife, that we did take Hayden to SoFi Stadium so that he could watch the Chiefs beat the Chargers.
Okay, that was football. This is baseball. Different sports.
Yes. So she's like, hey, did we just do the, you know, that other thing? Yeah, that was great. And got a little Californian sun.
Nice.
But, baby, this is playoff baseball.
Nothing like it.
Yeah.
It was 9 years before the last one. He could be out of high school by, like, play the age. He could be out of high school by the time this happened. We don't know.
Good point.
We don't know.
I love what you guys are bringing. I mean, this is great counsel, you know. I hope she's not
listening right now. She's gonna read through all these games.
I don't know if we have a winning case, fellas, but we are building one.
Well, if you go, you got to be one of many fans, hopefully 99% of fans, that boo Jazz Chisholm when he gets to play. You heard the comments. Let me play these again.
Yes.
Jazz Chisholm of the New York Yankees, of course, after the game. Everything the first, like, 12 seconds of the clip makes sense. Like, oh, of course, yeah, you feel good. And then he had to add last sentence there.
Still feels the same that we're going to win it, you know. I don't feel like anybody feels any different, you know. We're going to go out there and do our thing still. We still don't feel like any team is better than us. Like you said, we had a lot of missed opportunities tonight, so they just got lucky.
That part at the end, does that not sound like Isaiah Likely after Ravens lose to Chiefs? Does that not sound like Jamar Chase after losing to the Chiefs? It sounded a lot like the same crap we hear about the football team after said team loses to the Chiefs. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Ladies and gentlemen, I am nodding my head to Mr. Gold. Yes. I don't know what it is about, you know, Kansas City team sports in this current era. Who knows? You know, the Kansas City Current are going to be in the postseason here very soon. And I don't know. Maybe I'll hear something from, you know, Charlotte or whoever we play. You know, new, like, obviously Gotham.
Laponte got lucky. She didn't.
She's good. No, she's like, they're actually like very good at this. It is really reminiscent because it was quiet in Yankee Stadium in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
Real quiet. And I wonder if that plays psychologically for the home team and someone who really hasn't been through it before. I mean, Jazz got away with it game one. And you go, whew, that's more relief than joy. And now you're into like that worrying territory. So you try to say something. But no, that's not, hey, Jazz, that's not luck, man. Your boy threw a ball middle high and Salvador hit it over the fence. And then he like deteriorated from the moment that happened. And look,
he stuck his tongue out at the man and then that was it.
And through two games, you could argue that the Royals bullpen has been more reliable when they find the strike zone.
Yeah.
One guy couldn't find the strike zone. And I think Matt brought in John Schreiber and he was near the strike zone. But because the inning was going a certain way, the umpire was like, nah, man, I need you to be.
You got to be in it.
Yeah.
Not near it.
Yeah. I need wiffle ball pitches right now to get the strike zone back. So. Outside of that one inning, the Royals have had the better bullpen. They've relied more on their bullpen, and that is, I assume, going to continue through the rest of this series to where, hey, through two games, if you're a batter for the New York Yankees and you realize, man, we really got to get it. I mean, it's so reminiscent of 2014. We really got to get a lead in the first five innings because these guys are pretty good if they're not walking us and giving us extra outs.
So speaking of the luck factor, I feel like that's easy to do with the Chiefs because you're like, the other two teams were in the 20s and the 30s. It was like the 1928 Bears and the 1938 Packers. The last time a team won 10 games in a row.
Yes.
Without scoring more than 27 points. Haven't even managed to do it. Last night should have. Offense moved plenty well enough to score 27 points.
Yes.
But didn't need it. At this point with the Chiefs, like the luck factor is dead. I watch the Chiefs more than any other team. It's not, we all watch a lot of NFL.
Mm-hmm.
They make more mistakes than an average NFL team, right? How the hell do they win at a higher than average rate? Last night was not an example of that.
Okay.
Really only the couple of mistakes, right?
Right.
Juju Smith-Schuster at the goal line, a couple of holding penalties in a red zone area that screw with you, and the missed field goal. Pretty small ones.
Right.
The Juju one being the biggest one, but the other ones are pretty small, normal, every game mistakes. But in this 10-game winning streak, I would say they made more mistakes than their opponents 6-7 times out of 10. I don't know. Something like that. And they still won them all.
I think what we are learning, and this is somewhat, you know, resembling today's big news in the league, coaching is really at an all-time high in terms of importance.
Yeah, and it's at an all-time low of quality, maybe.
Perhaps, yeah. I think if you're really wanting to be critical about the NFL, the two easiest ways to do it is saying that coaching is abysmal for the most part, and quarterbacks are not as developed or not as good as executing the small stuff. The normal things. Yes.
Yeah.
The small normal things so that you could get to the higher level, so that you can get to those critical games that we all like to watch when it's, you know, back and forth in the fourth quarter and you feel like the defense has to make a play. It's just not a mistake on the other side of the ball. You know, with Robert Saleh getting fired today, I mean, it's understandable that this is poor coaching. Like, Kevin O'Connell is a really good coach and the Vikings are 5-0 because of it. They do not have a great quarterback. Okay, nope. They have an amazing receiver, but their quarterback is like,
and they're a really well coached defense too. If you want to talk about coaching,
Flores, right.
And Flores is a great defensive coach.
Flores is lighting the world on
fire.
He's
going to get head coach interviews again, depending on how you believe the NFL lawsuit stuff. But
yes,
if
an owner's willing to want to win,
right.
How bad do you want to win versus the perception of, you know, we might, I don't know if we want to.
He's actively suing us.
And he's of a different complexion than I am, you know.
Yeah.
So
there's
other things going on. But, yes, to your point, Cody, I mean, why are the Saints? Okay, you get past the 50-yard line in what is deemed a somewhat close game in the second half. You got to know either we're going forward or we're not.
It's a stuck in no man.
It's a certain down and distance. hey, if it's 4th and 10, okay, we might have to punt it, pin them back, hope to get the same field position, obviously, on the next possession. We can't go in there and be like, actually, I need to call a timeout. Actually, I need to waste one of the most valuable things that I actually do as a manager of my team. Hey, how about we stop letting the middle of the field be wide open against Travis Kelce and Juju Smith-Schuster? How about we stop doing that? There's a lot of just, I think, lower quality coaching. And even for the mistakes that the Chiefs make, particularly in the red zone, even the mistakes that Patrick Mahomes has made, well, they still have the more talented quarterback whenever the game is close. And also, that coach has been doing this so much longer than the other team's coach that he's more experienced and will make the least amount of mistakes in the most important times in the game. And we've just seen it over and over again. It takes someone like John Harbaugh to really push the Chiefs, right? Zach Taylor and Lou Anarumo, for whatever reason, get up for the Chiefs, as we've talked about
before. Might be the only team he studies. His defense is the worst in the league.
And then all of a sudden, they can't do anything. Which, again, that coaching is consistency. It is trying to find that opponent's weakness for that particular week and accentuating your strengths to obviously exploit that. The Chiefs do a really good job of that. I mean, hey, we don't have Rashee Rice. Great. Hey, Jody Fortson, you just got back here. You want to run some 4 tight end sets? Like, I'll do anything to get the middle of the field open because that's what's going to help my offense. And for whatever reason, the Saints really didn't adjust to that yesterday.
We have Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider, hanging out with us in studio here on a Tuesday. All right, Juju Smith-Schuster was unbelievable last night. I don't think, even if you thought he was going to be the number two option in the offense, nobody thought he was going to 130 yards receiving. I mean, that was unbelievable. We were joking about how a year ago Albert Breer said his knee was close to exploding, and fast forward, and now he's doing that. So that looks like a silly story that was out there a year ago. Props to Juju. With all that said, I don't care if Juju does something like this again in 2 weeks. I still think they would need to trade for a wide receiver because
yes.
Kareem Hunt not holding up is not problematic because Pacheco's coming back and it's the running back position. Juju and Travis Kelce, I don't doubt their performance. We just saw what they can do. Can they do it for another 15 weeks?
With no more breaks.
So I think they still... Juju could have four straight 1,000 or 100-yard games. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't care. Like, great still for him. I still need another wide receiver.
Yeah. If you are a diehard Chiefs fan and you're like happy, proud of the Royals, golf clap, I understand. The importance about yesterday was... not only did you win, and thankfully, as far as we know, no one else got seriously hurt. You know, there was a little bit of a hiccup with Wanya Morris, but I was told that he'll be fine. So, hey, you got out of the game with clean no injury issues. I mean, I'm looking at this schedule, y'all. It was really important for them to win that game because now not only are they still 5-0, but they really need the one seed. It is pretty clear, unlike last year, and I could argue that, like, you know, they would have been the one seed if they just caught the football.
Yeah.
You know,
but they've given themselves a nice early cushion.
That's right. And so, okay, you've won your lone divisional game so far. You are 5-0. It helps that, like, you know, Baltimore already beat them. Buffalo has 2 losses. You will get a chance to beat both Buffalo and the Houston Texans later in the year. Just keep dominating the division and you will give yourself a very, very good chance at the one seed with a 35-year-old tight end who is still your number one option as a receiver. Crazy. A 27-year-old, tight end, or excuse me, wide receiver, and Juju Smith-Schuster, who...
I can't believe he's only 27.
He's not in the prime of his career, as we all realize. And, yeah, Pacheco will come back, but they do need to manage Kareem Hunt. They've squeezed as much as they can out of these first 2 weeks, but they're going to... obviously have to like scale down some of the carries for him so that, who knows, maybe he and Pacheco can both be effective at the same time during the stretch run. So look, Cleveland, terrible. Pittsburgh,
Panthers.
I think you're better than Pittsburgh. Panthers. Do we even have to fly to Charlotte to play that game?
Raiders and Broncos twice each, right? Yeah, four
I mean,
there.
Bo Nix against, I mean, against Steve Spagnuolo.
And Antonio Pierce changes quarterbacks every half. So, you know, that's what he can't decide on who he wants.
Yeah.
Chiefs schedule is really not that bad. Strength of schedule wise, based on current win percentage, it's like 16th hardest in the NFL.
Yes. And it could get lower or higher depending on your perspective. It could get
the
better.
49ers will probably go up a little bit, but some of those other teams are going to drag that average down.
Yes, and the 49ers aren't healthy either, you know?
Nope.
And so they have their own issues to deal with. Yes, it was really important that you give yourself a cushion and you have the bye week, and you can try to see if you can get to, like, I mean, this is a little bit outside of the norm. This is more like college football analysis, but, like, can you get to Black Friday undefeated? Like, let's say they beat the 49ers, who don't have Christian McCaffrey for that game because he's still dealing with the Achilles, although there's a slim chance he could play in that game, but he won't be 100% effective. It'll be his first game all year. Raiders, you destroy them. You know, Tampa Bay, frisky.
For sure.
Frisky.
At home, though.
At home, prime time. Beat the brakes off Denver. Buffalo's probably the hardest game on that schedule, but as we see, the Bills need a receiver just as much as the Chiefs do.
They do. They also need some clock management situational advice.
Ah, McDermott single-handedly lost him a game.
Yes. And then you beat Carolina, whoever that quarterback is. Maybe by that point, Bryce Young's back in the mix.
That's true.
In terms of being the starter. If you get through that six-game stretch and you're 11-0, man, it makes the hardest part of the schedule somewhat tolerable, because I want to remind people that you will obviously have the tiebreaker over Buffalo. You will have continued to not lose a divisional game. So you're guaranteed to either be the 2 seed or the 1 seed just based on that purely heading into Black Friday against the Raiders, who are god-awful. The Chargers will probably be in a hunt for a playoff spot, but it's the schedule. It's December 8th to December 15th to December 21st to Christmas on a Wednesday.
You're losing one of those.
You don't want any of those games to be like as important as they potentially could be if you take care of business in the second, you know, stretch of the season. They finish the season at Denver. If everything goes well, you're not seeing Patrick Mahomes. You're not seeing Travis Kelce. You're not seeing Chris Jones in uniform in that game. So, again, it's a long ways away. A lot of things can change, of course. Who knows when Pacheco comes back? Maybe that's around December 8th, December 15th against the Cleveland Browns. But if they beat Buffalo and they keep winning these close games, all of a sudden they can do a much better job managing the worst part of their schedule. Because as I look at it, I literally shake my head because Cleveland's terrible. But, like, the most important game can't be against the Houston Texans, knowing you have to play the Steelers on the road on Christmas Day 4 days later. It's nuts.
Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic. Appreciate it, man. Hopefully you talk your way into a little Wednesday or Thursday action over at Kauffman Stadium, man.
I gotta get there on Thursday. Thursday might be my end. That might be my hook.
Let us know if you're out there.
Yeah, I fellas. It's been a great season. If you pull this off, legendary status.
Yes, no doubt.
Legend.
Earlier today, we talked to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, to ask him about maybe a little bit of a rivalry building based off of some actions from the New York Yankees last night, pre- and post-game. We'll have that conversation for you again next on Cody and Gold. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. Coming up in just a second, we'll get to our conversation with J.J. Piccolo, Royals general manager. He joined us earlier today. He joins us every Tuesday, as long as the season continues. I hope for many...
It's every other Tuesday in the regular season. Now it's every week.
Yeah, I hope it's next Tuesday as well. And we
and
just
the
keep,
Tuesday after
yeah,
that.
Tuesday. Just keep rolling all the way through the month of October. Of course, an off day today for both the Royals and Yankees. And then back at it at Kauffman Stadium, which is going to be just an incredible atmosphere. Tomorrow, the drive will be broadcasting live outside of Gate D. And we also hope to have some more details on some of the T-shirts that we were talking about with Nate Taylor as a station that we have from our friends over at Raygun and DM Injury Lawyers as well. And they were kind enough to help us with some shirts. And I think will be something that you'll want to get your hands on ahead of the first game at Kauffman in the postseason since 2015. But let's get to our conversation with JJ. We started talking to him about Mikel Garcia, who was locked in, to say the least. He was stellar yesterday, fourth Royals player to achieve a four-hit outing in postseason history. He had four singles, drove in one run during the game. He's also, by the way, batting 362 over 12 games at Yankee Stadium. So he just likes hitting in that ballpark. And we started our conversation with JJ asking him about Mikel stepping up. And you know, a lot of people didn't want him to lead off. Fans were like, what is he leading off for? And he obviously came through for the Royals.
Yeah, he really did. Michael, he's a great competitor. And really last night going into the game, you know, looking at Rondon, we were trying to figure out how can we get some offense going at the top of the lineup. And as well as Michael Massey swinging the bat, you know, the left-on-left thing is sometimes difficult, especially against Rondon, who had really good stuff to start the game. But, you know, Mikel is what we call an action player, and if he can get on base, we know he can steal a base. We like he and Bobby back-to-back. I mean, that's how we had it set up early in the year, and Q pushed the right button last night. He put the right guy in the leadoff spot, and it paid off for us.
I think a lot of times we've talked about this earlier in the season, JJ, but sometimes it's reinforced in the postseason. When you see, and he starts to get a base, and he starts to, like, feel himself a little bit, right? You see that same, like, winter league player that was in the middle of the action, I think, too. It felt like last night for Mikel, it was about once he starts feeling, like, the energy of postseason, he kind of turns into a different player.
He does, and that was brought up by a couple of our staff members about what he did in winter ball and just the look in his eye, the confidence he has in himself. He likes the big stage, you know, and it's something that we're well aware of. And to see what he did in Baltimore and then to come here and play in this environment and play as well as he did is not very surprising to us. So just happy he did it.
When you look at what Carlos Rodon had done in the first inning, I think a lot of this time you might get into like, oh, here comes this big moment. Maybe he's going to have the best stuff. And then you guys run him out in the fourth inning. Were you surprised that they were able to get to him, I guess, so quickly? Or just based on how that game started, were you surprised that he ended up getting run out of that game so quick?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, his stuff the first inning was really good. And, you know, just knowing the player, he was amped up. You know, I didn't realize. I didn't see what he had done. I didn't have a monitor in front of me. But I think it got the attention of our dugout and kind of flipped the script a little bit on him. But, you know, he's a great competitor. He's got a great track record. His stuff was playing up in the first inning for sure. Just sitting there is hoping that he calms down a little bit and you get a little more 94s and 95s instead of 98s and 99s. And it happened, but it really happened because Salvi took a very professional at bat that started that inning. And then we got into the, you know, the old mantra of keep the line moving. We ran the bases extremely well that inning. I know the inning ended on Mikel, you know, between first and second, but really he wanted to draw that attention so there wasn't a play to play. So it's a smart baseball play. You know, with any kind of luck, he gets back to first, and now Bobby's hitting. But we strung together a bunch of good hits. There's really good base running in there. That's the type of baseball we need to play, and if we do that, we'll be successful.
How much do you, you know, we know the players love it. Fans certainly love it, JJ. How much do you get enjoyment out of, you know, Salvador Perez sticking his tongue back out, seemingly at Rodon, we'll assume?
I don't think it was seemingly. I think it was a definitive reason he did that. But that's great. I mean, these guys are competitors. I mean, as much as they may get into it, I know the other series out on the West Coast are getting into it pretty good. You know, that happens in games. There's emotion. Teams want to, you know, teams want to win. Players want to do well. And Salvi, being the leader that he is, I mean, he can't control if he's going to hit a home run. But once he does it, he's going to send a message back. And, you know, we're not going to get pushed around. I mean, they're a good team, but, you know, we're a good team. So we're not going to get pushed around, and it's just going to be the way we compete. And I love that he did it. I think it's great.
We're talking to JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager, here on 96.5 The Fan. One other thing throughout this postseason, and certainly we saw it come into play yesterday against the Yankees, is some of the experienced guys, even a couple that really still haven't been with the club all that long, Tommy Pham and Yuli Gurriel, for example, have really played a huge role so far for you guys in the postseason.
Well, it can't be overstated, and I feel like I've been saying this over and over, especially this week getting here to New York. You know, experience in the playoffs is valuable. I mean, those guys are not going to vibrate. They've been there before. They've been in these crazy back-and-forth games. They know what it's like. They steady the ship for you. Tommy's done it since we got him. And Yuli, to be very candid, I think he's gotten better over the last couple. Every at-bat he gets, it's a better at-bat. His bat speed's really good. His pitch selection is really good. And the ball's coming off of his bat better now than it did when we first acquired him. So it's very encouraging. And I hope when the dust settles and some of our younger players are going through this for the first time, really digest, you know, what they're going through, they'll notice those types of at-bats that Tommy and Yuli have taken, because they are professional at-bats. And as our players get more experience, they'll take the same type of at-bats and we'll be an even better team.
Thinking of some of the younger players, Bobby Witt Jr., back-to-back games, 0-for-5. First time in his career, it only took 3 years for him to have back-to-back 0-for-5 games. I don't think anybody here is necessarily worried about him. But what do you see in his at-bats? And do you feel like maybe even particular in the seventh inning, was there any pressing?
I don't think there's pressing. I think they're just pitching him really well. They made some really good pitches. You know, there's a little bit of chase, but when you got Clay Holmes pitching and he's got that split or whatever he calls it with the late movement, they're tough to lay off of. You know, Bobby won well, but I don't think he's pressing. The good thing is guys around him are doing their job, and it's nice to know that we're going to win games in the playoffs if Bobby does have an offer, because it's going to happen. Bobby will bounce back, and he'll be really happy when we get back to Kansas City. Actually, they all are really excited about getting back home. It's been a long road trip, but, you know, they know there's going to be a big crowd. There's going to be a lot of emotion. It's going to be very comfortable, and I would be very surprised if Bobby doesn't bounce back and have a solid game tomorrow.
JJ, it feels like it's just you and Salvi who could kind of explain what playoff baseball is like at Kauffman Stadium. What do you do? Show highlights? You have Salvi tell them what it's like? How do you get the team prepared for what Kauffman Stadium is typically like in a postseason format?
Well, I think it's great. We went to Atlanta. There's a great atmosphere there. Baltimore is a great atmosphere. You come here, it's a great atmosphere. So we've played with, you know, as the opposition in these tough places to play. Now you go home and the momentum just swings towards you. But all of the guys that have come through our system, they've seen all the highlights. A lot of, you know, our baseball 101 classes or plays we've picked out of the playoff runs we were in 14 and 15. So they've seen the hype and the emotion and the stadium turn blue. So they have not lived it, but I think they're looking forward to seeing it because they've heard all about it.
There's no question about the atmosphere that we're going to have here in Kansas City tomorrow. But then you look at the other series in baseball. There's been a lot of conversation about the playoff formats and the time off, even if you're one of the top seeds and all that. Seeing these series are tied at a game apiece, do you think home field advantage, though, is really still a thing in the postseason with the way we currently have the format set up?
Well, I don't know what the, you know, the results aren't necessarily saying that. But if you ask any team, they'd much rather play at home than on the road. I mean,
sure.
You know, the crowd noise, the emotion that's there. I mean, you definitely want that on your side. But these guys are major league players, so they go on the road and they're able. It's amazing when you think about it, what they're able to block out and focus and concentrate, and how they're able to perform in hostile environments. But you know, when you're at home, you know, it should swing in your favor. And I know it's kind of an oddity right now that the visiting teams are winning the wild cards, but I think give it another 20, 25 years, those numbers are probably even out.
Do you go back and look at like the American League Central now, knowing that you're watching the Tigers and the Guardians series and your team? Do you go back and look and be like, man, that was a way tougher division than the rest of baseball gave us credit for? Just knowing that maybe having to play those teams, I don't know, 30 combined times might have prepared you against some of the better teams in the American League, because that's clearly what the American League Central is now at this point.
The division definitely was better than anticipated, and we maybe didn't realize it going through the season how good it was. But now you look up, three of the four left are out of the Central. We're all competing very well, and the Twins just barely missed. So the division was very good. So I think there's a lot to be proud of. I don't really care who we play in the next round, but when it's all said and done, we're going to be really happy with the jobs that the front offices and the players have done in throughout our division. And now there's going to be Dodgers next year, you know, was it an aberration or not, but we'll enjoy the moment right now and worry about that later.
Seth Lugo will get the nod tomorrow for you guys at Kauffman Stadium, much like most of this roster. I mean, this will be the biggest game that he pitches in, but given his veteran experience, how do you guys feel about him going up against this Yankees lineup? Because right now, it's been a string of starters not going five innings. How much is that just based off of the success of your bullpen right now, not feeling like you have to get six innings out of starters, which is probably not something that, a lot of people would have been saying a few weeks ago?
Well, if you look at just this series, I think what happens, the hitters are taking good at-bats. The strike zones, are tighter for whatever reason. They're tighter, and pitch counts are getting amped up. And even there's been a bunch of jams we've been in. The Yankees were in jams that they got out of, but the pitch counts are just, skyrocketing. But when I look at a guy like Seth Lugo, who's a very calming presence on the mound, who probably pitched his best game of the year against the Yankees when we were here last month, he's not going to be intimidated. He's going to pitch the type of game that he's pitched all year long. And I believe he'll go deep in the game tomorrow night, because that's just how he's built and he understands. And now he's had 2 days to watch the opposing lineup, and he prepares great, and he'll have an excellent game plan going into it. And I would be surprised if he doesn't execute, because he's done it all year long.
You've been able to rely on the five guys in the bullpen you have for a lot of it. Schreiber, Urseg, Long, Bubich. We know that. If you guys at some point in this series or in the next series need Singer or Lynch, how hard is it for them to just not pitch at all and then come into a relief situation, JJ? How can you keep them ready in case their number is called?
Yeah, well, they're throwing their bullpens. I mean, they're not throwing it with high intensity, but they're keeping their delivery in sync, and they're doing those things. But, as we were talking about the adrenaline of the playoffs, I think that will take care of, the lack of touches on the mound, for however many days it's been. And it's just part of it. You just got to trust them. They're on the playoff roster for a reason. It's not that we're afraid to use them. It's just the situation hasn't called for. The one thing that, I hope people understand, that the ghost runner in extra innings does not exist. That's where your guys who are stretched out come into play, and that's where Brady can help us. That's where Lynch can help us. Doesn't mean they won't pitch before the ninth inning, but you have to keep that in mind. And we've been in tight games. All these games have been tight games. We've been fortunate not to play an extra inning game yet, but chances are we're going to, and they're going to factor in quite a bit, but they'll be ready to pitch, because it's just exciting. Their adrenaline will be pumping, and they'll compete like they have all year.
I saw there's a cool story heading into yesterday's game, though, that Cole Reagans, at one point while you guys were in New York, him and a couple of his teammates went to Central Park and kind of warmed up there and played some catch there. Like 11-minute walk, I guess, from the team hotel or something like that. You play some catch in Central Park as well?
I walked quite a bit, but I didn't play any catch.
You should have. Now that seems like such a cool idea now.
Well, to get to Yankee Stadium from where we're staying, it could take up to an hour. So to go in and play catch for 15 minutes, Brian Sweeney and Q, so why don't you guys just take your gloves, go to Central Park, which, I'm looking at it right now from our hotel, and go play catch there. And that's what they did. Kind of cool. And I think he said something that he was surprised nobody recognized him, but he was happy. So I'm assuming he wasn't wearing his Royals gear.
Since you spent the last 3 days there, what's the best street food?
The gyros. That's my go-to when I come to New York. It's I don't eat them all that much, but the gyro is a good sandwich.
All right, JJ, appreciate it. We'll see you out of the K tomorrow, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There you go. That's the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Piccolo, with us here on 96.5 The Fan. So that was a little bit earlier today.
I didn't have it in me to correct him that it's gyro.
Oh,
I didn't have it in me, dude.
I wasn't going to do that.
His team's winning. Mm-hmm. He's in a good mood. I don't need to tell him that gyro's
correct
pronunciation.
Another reason why I didn't say anything, up until, I would say, maybe 10 years ago.
You called it gyro?
I used to say that. I used to say
so
gyros.
So you were understanding.
I
understood.
I knew exactly what he meant, and I used to say gyros as well.
It's a real white dude way to pronounce
it. I used to say it.
Let me go get that gyro. You're like, that's not what it's called.
So I can relate. That's why I didn't say anything.
That's nice of you. I don't need to bring anybody down today.
That's
this
right.
is a happy day in KC.
Positive vibes in KC. We're back at it tomorrow. We'll once again talk to Josh Vernier. We'll have Ross Tucker on the show, and we'll get set for Game 3 of the ALDS. Up next, C-Dot and Rob on the draft.